Well, the uproar over school funding in the state of Illinois, especially how it pertains to CPS, has dominated all of the education headlines for the past years. But is the fight over who should pay for schools overshadowing the discussion we should be having about what's actually going on in said schools? This could be anything from curriculum, college preparedness, to achievement, competitiveness. These are all issues that we aren't talking about much these days, even though the state has submitted how they will meet the new federal requirements laid out in the Every Student Succeeds Act. That's the new act that replaces No Child Left Behind. Essentially, the act gives the power to control policy back to the state level. But is Illinois taking full advantage? Brandon Wright is the editorial director at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute. The Fordham Institute is an education policy think tank. Mr. Wright has read the state's plan and suggests we are ignoring our high-achieving students, instead focusing on bringing along the kids who need more support. See, they get all the bulk of the attention, while the students who pass reading and math with flying colors, they're forgotten about. Brandon Wright's on the line with us now. Brandon, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Hey, Justin, thanks.
So let's talk about this. First, before we get into it, because this is a topic that I didn't know much about, and you know, diving into it today, it's fascinating. But the idea that this Every Student Succeeds Act is the replacement for No Child Left Behind.
Yes.
So tell me why that happened. That this back in 2015. But talk about what that does, what every Student Succeed Act does that No Child Left Behind didn't.
Sure. So it replaced No Child Left Behind in large part because the law was put in place as a way to attempt to raise achievement, and that just didn't really happen. It was a law that essentially failed across a number of indicators. Now, the plan then, with a much more Republican Congress, was to pass a bill with bipartisan support that largely gave the power back to states, essentially changing the philosophy in terms of how the federal government should be involved in education.
Right.
Under the old law, they were very heavy-handed. That didn't work, so the pendulum swings the other way.
So now it's up to the states to essentially control their own policy.
In large part, yeah. There's some loose outlines. Those outlines have become even looser under the Trump administration after they repealed a number of Obama administration regulations that actually added more than the law had by itself. But yes, there's a loose structure. In large part in terms of how states should hold their schools accountable, how states can ensure that their schools are doing right by their kids.
Well, you know, I kind of joked at the top of the program that, you know, the states had to put their accountability plans into the federal government last month. And it's, you know, it's always probably a good sign when both conservatives and liberals don't like it. you saw from both, you know, the stuff that you've written about, but also what you saw, even the Chicago Teachers Union and other unions coming forward saying, you know, this doesn't really do anything. It's vague or it doesn't really address the problems of No Child Left Behind. Let's talk about what's in the Illinois Accountability Plan, because it really seems to repeat a lot of the, you know, so-called failures of the No Child Left Behind.
Yeah, so the big problem when it comes to accountability with the old law was it essentially looked at one thing: how many kids achieved above proficient in a given school. That's basically it. So a single objective level of achievement, how many kids are above it. If you don't have enough, you get sanctioned. The problem there, right, is that if that's your only indicator, then you're incentivizing schools to pay attention to kids they think they can get over said bar, and ensure that kids who are at risk of falling under it don't.
Right.
Now the problem there is that obviously in every classroom, in every school, there's a wide spectrum of achievement. So kids are far below, and especially far above, schools aren't really incentivized to pay attention to them as much as they should. So the largest group that disadvantaged was high achievers, and in particular, low-income disadvantaged high achievers. So what the new law does is when you look at achievement, you don't have to look at one single bar. You can look at 3, 4, 5, 6, or you can even do this thing called scale scores where you don't actually have
you can be creative, right?
A level that's complicated.
Right.
Right. And then in addition to achievement, you can look at growth. And here's a big change, right? So as opposed to just seeing where a kid is at a given year, when you look at growth, you're seeing where he or she is at the beginning of a school year and where he or she is at the end, essentially seeing what the school and teachers did for that kid. And the important thing there is that our schools, and you see this a lot in Chicago and really any place with a wide variety of affluence, kids who go to low-income schools generally start kindergarten at a lower achievement level than the more affluent peers. This isn't their fault. It's simply because of all of the advantages that more affluent kids have from the time they're born to the time they're five. Then that gap persists and often grows between kindergarten and 12th grade. So if you're really just giving a single objective bar and applying it to all schools and saying, if your school doesn't have enough kids above that bar, we're going to label you a bad school, you're going to end up labeling a lot of low-income schools bad schools simply because of the kids that are there, no matter what the schools are actually doing.
It seems like a cycle that continues. You just mentioned, I mean, the widening gap from kindergarten to eighth grade. I mean, it just keeps going in that direction. And then most of the resources for the school are going to be pushed towards the lower achievement kids because they need to get up or otherwise they're going to be sanctioned by the federal government. Let's talk about with the new plan, essentially with the new act to get rid of that and change the way and really take a look at that gap. The state of Illinois, and this is where this is the head scratcher for I think for you guys, for the union, for others, they don't really get creative with the plan. It's almost a somewhat carbon copy of what we were doing with No Child Left Behind.
Yeah, because you had a waiver there, and under the waiver, you could actually do some more creative things. So there is a ton of...
What can they do? Or let me ask you this. What should they do, the state of Illinois, to add to that plan to make sure we're not just repeating the same failures we've had for the last 20 years?
Sure. So two big things, going back to the same two topics. Achievement, currently they just look at a single level of achievement. They do exactly what was mandated under No Child Left Behind. They don't have to. Tons of states don't. Currently, there have been 16 plans submitted to the Department of Education. Seven of them don't do what Illinois is doing. So one option is just to, instead of having one bar, do a thing called a performance index, have three. Have a sort of basic, a proficient, and an advanced. Schools, for example, get extra credit who achieve at or above advanced, just essentially giving some incentives to pay attention to kids across the achievement spectrum, including the low achievers and the high achievers. So that's the first one. Again, tons of states have done this, more will. Illinois doesn't, but it can. The second is growth. So Illinois does this good and bad. When you look at K through eight, growth for all kids actually counts for 50% of the annual grade that Illinois schools get. So every year, schools get A, B, C, D, and the public hears about this. It's just a very easy way to summarize how good a school is under the current plan. So for K through eight, Illinois here actually does a great job. Growth counts for half. That is way more than a ton of states. It's basically ideal. Kudos to Illinois. The problem is that when you get to high school, they don't look at it at all. It goes from counting for 50% of grades to zero. Once a kid hits ninth grade. Now, ensuring that kids graduate high school at some sort of objective level of preparedness for adulthood is, of course, important, right? But we should still try to measure what's going on in schools and what teachers are doing. So growth also is important in high school. It might not be as important as it is in second grade, but it's important.
But it's more important than
0%.
You know, I got to say, Brandon, it's interesting debate because, you know, and reading some of the stories about Illinois' plan and some of the lawmakers that were involved in it, they talked about, you know, if changing what they heard from constituents is they want equal. They want across the board. They want equality in schools. They want everyone to have the same opportunities. And it's interesting because changing the tiers may actually, or changing the bars that you have to reach may actually do that. But on surface, it looks like it's weighted in the sense that you may get more resources sent to one bar than another. And it actually, on its surface, looks like it's inequality. So how do you get past the perceptions of people who would think automatically that that system, the three-bar system, would be abused?
Well, so, yes, it's a very hard PR sell. And I understand that, especially if you're just saying, hey, pay more attention to gifted kids. People think, oh, you're paying attention to affluent kids who are already achieving well. They'll go to college. Why do you care about
that? They don't need the attention.
I understand I think the easiest way to sort of illuminate why this is important is when they talk about equality, when they put into place a policy based on trying to expand equality, they're really talking about, right, affluence or just disadvantage, right? So you're trying to get more opportunities for low-income kids, for minority kids. And that, of course, is really important. But what we're advocating for here when we say, look at achievement across the entire spectrum, look at growth for all kids, a big reason why we advocate for that is, to our eye, the perhaps the most neglected subgroup in all of American schools are disadvantaged, high-achieving kids. Kids who come from poor families, kids who come from a disadvantaged background, and they just happen to be achieving at a higher level than their peers. Now, that's probably not as high as the more affluent, high-achieving peers, but in relation to their schools, their classrooms, they're already well above that bar. And they're in a school with so many low-achieving kids that they don't really get any attention at all. And these also, again, are disadvantaged kids.
Okay, let me...
They deserve...
If
we're talking about equality, they deserve to have their education maximized as much as anyone else.
Let me give you one more question, just the last one as we wrap up here. I guess the way I see this, and I think that there is some sort of like shift in the paradigm when you think of just how education plays out. I mean, you could change the bar. You could change this to a different tier. You could have the additional bar, which is growth. And you could see schools that traditionally have been labeled failing schools, a lot of which may be here in the city of Chicago that we have just already sort of given a bad reputation to, or that, you know, the Chicago Public Schools or the state of Illinois or the federal government have deemed to be deficient in some way, actually turn out to be doing a better job based because these standards have changed.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That when you look at different things, and especially if you look at things like growth that are clearly more representative of what's actually going on in the classroom in terms of what schools and teachers are doing, if you look at that as opposed to something that is completely outside of the school's control and heavily correlated to demographics and things like that, when you look at growth and what's actually happening in a school, the way you evaluate schools and the way these different schools are graded, it's going to change substantially, which A, is simply more fair, but B, is more important because it's giving more information to administrators, to policymakers, to teachers, and perhaps most importantly, parents and the public in general, so that these parents can actually know where they're sending their school or kids to school. It's incredibly important that parents actually know what's going on in their kids' schools on a day-to-day basis.
It's fascinating.
It's
fascinating to think about just a paradigm shift like that. Just changing the standards could change the way we even look at our own educational institutions here in the state of Illinois. Brandon Wright, the editorial director at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, an education policy think tank. Brandon, thanks for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Justin.